Welcome, everyone. Really delighted to have John Titus with us today as a guest. Now, John is a fully qualified attorney of law in the United States of America, further to which he runs and manages the YouTube and better for you still, the BitChute title, Best Evidence, B-E-S-T, evidence, as you would. And John has been active in patent law, which is a fascinating area in of itself. But more recently, almost I would say, it feels like a very conscious hobbyist, real concerns about the state of the rule of law, not only in America, but globally as well. And he's watching each little shoe drop in terms of the undermining of the rule of law, with particular interest to the Federal Reserve, Larry Fink, and other people in very core critical positions. John, really glad to have you on the show. Welcome.
It's my first time here. Thanks so much for having me. And
absolutely.
That was a fantastic introduction. Let me qualify one thing. When you say patent law, it has a connotation in the U.S. of meaning you apply, you help inventors get patents in front of the patent office. I don't do that. I do patent litigation, meaning I'm in court, arguing in front of judges, questioning witnesses. In that background, litigation has really informed what I've tried to do on my YouTube channel, which for the most part, I think I set up that YouTube channel in 2014 or so, really concerned the loss of the rule of law in the U.S. and throughout the world. And the implications of that. And I think that the rule of law, a lot of times, it's kind of in the back of our minds, but we don't really think about it. And we don't really think about the implications of it. And the implications of the loss of the rule of law are very serious. And so while you might have a lot of people in your channel, I know you've had some, you know, really outstanding financial luminaries. I have zero financial training, zero financial background. It is a litigator, really, and someone, and really a lawyer. And so I'm kind of coming at this at a different angle. I'm not a day trader. I don't trade really. I'm a long-term investor at best. And so my background is a little bit different. And my channel, like I say, it really goes into the implications of the rule of law, which undeniably do have monetary and financial implications. But that's really sort of a short form summary of what I'm done on my channel. I'm also on Odyssey, by the way.
Great. Yes, us too. And I'm going to encourage people to go to the Decentralized Audit channel, also under Best Evidence, I'm assuming. John, where do we start? Wow. I'm seeing it without any legal expertise. You must be just watching shoes and fruit falling off the tree in terms of the undermining of the rule of law. Where's it starting? Where's the biggest events happening? Where should we all be worried?
Okay, let's work in reverse chron. No litigation term will go kind of reverse chronological order. I've got a new video up. It's my most recent video called Your Federal Reserve Cancer Prescription is Ready for Pickup. And that video is about some testimony that Jay Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, gave in front of the House Financial Services Committee on March 2nd of this year. And essentially in that testimony, about an hour in, he's asked the question, you know, hey, we noticed that China and Russia are transacting in their own native currencies. Pakistan is thinking about getting into the fray with them. They're ditching the U.S. dollar. What impact might that have on the U.S. economy? And Powell's answer, which I play the clip in my video, Powell's answer essentially is, well, you know, there have been two world reserve currencies before. The world reserve currency, you know, we have it now because we have, you know, historically the U.S. has had low inflation. That's out the window. And we've had the rule of law. And I'm telling you, that's out the window. And so he was very nervous during the testimony. His body language, you know, the verbal answer is one thing, and people trying to wiggle out. But the nonverbal behavior is far more telling, because the person giving the testimony has way less control over their body. They don't really know what they're doing. They don't know they have tells, and they do. And Powell's body language when he's given that answer is extremely nervous. And he's talking about the loss of world reserve currency status for the U.S. And I don't have to tell you that that has huge implications. I mean, we just saw Sri Lanka. It's defaulting on bonds. Its bonds are trading at something like 46 cents on the dollar now. You know, that's because Sri Lanka borrows in foreign currencies. And
right.
If you know, in the U.S., we have the exorbitant privilege of being able to sort of print our own currency. We don't need to borrow anybody else's money. We can just print up our own money. You lose the world reserve currency status. To the extent you lose the world reserve currency status, you're going to end up kind of borrowing in foreign currencies, and you can get into a lot of trouble because if the foreign currency appreciates against the currency you just borrowed in, you're in deep trouble. And that's what
That's
happened to Sri
the same
Lanka.
trap every time, though, isn't it? To get everybody to borrow in the base currency and then to see sufficient corruption and
Ding.
nefarious spending and then the economic hitman all over again. And you have a collapse in the currency and then you're now owned.
That's exactly right. So that's one place to sort of talk about is, well, what's going on with the US? The backdrop of that obviously was, we have the thing going on in Ukraine and the US, supposedly, the current story making the rounds. It's not credible, but the current story is there were some Biden staffers decided to freeze Russia's reserves. And that's how this happened. They didn't have any oversight. The story is ludicrous for a couple of reasons. First, the notion that any, junior level staffer is going to be able to make a decision of that magnitude is just, it's preposterous. Number one. Number two, even assuming your story is true, why haven't the adults in the room, now that they know what's gone on,
Under the
unfrozen those assets?
yeah.
And the reason this is a concern is, remember, Jay Powell testified that one of the reasons we have world reserve currency status is we have the rule of law. Well, I got news for you. The money in our system, there are laws and there are rules that govern the creation and disposition of all money. And so you can't just willy-nilly up and freeze somebody's assets. There has to be due process. There has to be statutes involved. Like, okay, what did they do? What hoops do you need to jump through? What legal criteria do you need to satisfy to freeze those assets? None of that happened. According to their own story, it was junior staffers were able to do that with a snap of their fingers. So that tells you right there that we don't have the rule of law.
Can I make a comment on that? One of the things that I
Certainly.
was always interested by Vladimir Putin is that he actually is legally trained. And even when they had Ukraine and the Crimea, he always had precedent and followed certain steps. And what we're actually saying is, in this Biden administration currently, we've actually just gone and we've undermined the right of ownership. This is property, essentially. It's property. Okay,
Right.
this is digital property, and I'm sure we're going to move on to physical property, which affects us all as well. But if you lose the law and someone can just seize, it's almost like the cash seizure if you're driving around in the States and the police stop you and you're having, in their idea, an unnatural amount. Let's say I have $10,000 on me because I'm going to purchase a vehicle or something, and they don't accept. It's a confiscation. It's almost getting into confiscation. We are going almost full mafia, aren't we? It's kind of like the Cyprus bailouts. Suddenly got written into law. It's kind of first we steal and then we legalize theft. And this is a kind of complete breakdown in rule and law. And so many, you're one of very few people that are actually talking about the most dangerous thing about that is they've found a justification to confiscate an asset that they had no legal precedent or a right of access to. They followed no process to doing it. They just took it because they could.
Yeah, listen, I'm not saying they don't have a justification. What I am saying is that whatever justification they have, that belongs in some sort of legal form, a judge, a
Correct.
tribunal, whatever, according to the statutes by which
Process.
that's created. But what they say now is, well, it was junior staffers who decided they were kind of angry at Russia and they're just going to freeze their reserves. There is no due process there whatsoever. And the more horrifying example to me, along the same lines as the ones you cited, is in Canada. Remember,
Yes.
Canada froze people's bank accounts just because they donated to a political cause the Canadian officials didn't like. Again, that's no rule of law. And it
And
means, where can you invest reliably if you don't if you know going into any sort of investment that your investment can be just confiscated?
well, interestingly, on the back of that, just to build on your story, Coinbase, who's one of the most compliant to new rules and regs and the first to be handing over tax information and various others, changed their laws so that they can demand answers as to who is the recipient of said funds on the Bitcoin transfers or any other crypto in the event that they were sending, and this came again out of the trucker, the same event that you're referring to, that they could disbar you sending money to anything that was known to be a fund that was supporting people that were essentially not being paid and part of a protest. So it even extended into a realm that supposedly is not yet governmentally owned. And
Right,
that is the
right.
big libertarian, supposed libertarian Bitcoin fixes all of this, only for a government's overreaching arm again to reach into another arena, whereby that they are now demanding that you say who's receiving it for any amount above, and I think it was a very trivial amount. So sorry, just to build on to your narrative, but very, very, it further builds the case that government is just all about octopus arms of control and access and almost disbarment of freedom of movement, freedom of funds, freedom of everything.
Right. And the Department of Justice in the U.S., remember, the Department of Justice is the law enforcer at the federal level. It's the only federal agency that can prosecute and jail individuals. You know, other agencies like the SEC, they can fine you, but they can't jail you. Yes. So the DOJ, it pays, you know, you better keep your eye on them. It's a very important agency. It's, to my mind, it's as important as the Treasury. Right. So when you look at what the DOJ has done with cryptos, what they've proven again and again and again is whether or not they can get to the cryptos themselves, they can damn sure get to the crypto exchanges. And they've come up again and again with subpoenas, and they go and they subpoena the exchange, and that's how they're seizing $3 billion here, $4 billion there. But the camel's nose is now under the tent on that score. And you're exactly right. The government has shown that it's, you know, fully intent on getting its fingers into every pie possible.
And to the extent that they destroy people's businesses with their inquiries. So just to further embellish the comment you made, because I'm in the crypto space, possibly a bit more, you're on the legal side, but they, Bitfinex used to be the largest exchange. And they were hounded and harassed into being probably now only the sixth, seventh biggest exchanges. And they were, great damage was done to them during the Tether questioning and all of that. Then Binance became the largest, only to find themselves on the wrong side again on a basis, mainly out of the Department of Justice, who you're pointing out, and the SEC inquiries on Binance that then saw Binance. And in fact, the CEO stood down of active involvement and said, you know, clearly this is not a growth game anymore. I need more compliance people. I need more of this to deal with the inbound attack vectors that were coming on him. And they lost a bunch of ground of market share to mainly FTX, which is a sort of New York-based Sam Bankman-Fried-based exchange. So we've seen how actually this, how damaging to the biggest and strongest centralized exchanges this has been, in that they've just never recovered that level of market share once they fall into the sights of the SEC and the Department of Justice, recognizing that they're two different arms, but they were both involved.
Yeah, that's a serious thing. And that's only one side of the coin. That's the confiscation side of the coin. The flip side of that coin is there are certain people in the U.S., which we know to a certainty now after all these years, namely big banks, that can perpetrate crimes with absolute impunity. They're not even, it's not even that they're not prosecuted, and it's not that the executives aren't prosecuted, which they're not. We know, we've known for almost 10 years now, due to an episode of called The Untouchables, on PBS, I'm drawing a blank on the name, but Martin Smith produces a show called The Untouchables, in which he asked the Justice Department, the representative, Lanny Brewer, as the assistant AG, attorney general at the time, he said, you know, we're told that you guys have not issued any subpoenas, no document reviews, no wiretaps. What do you say about that? And he doesn't deny it. And his body language gives away the fact that the DOJ did not even issue so much as a subpoena to any major bank or any major Wall Street institution. And that's horrifying, because what that means is that certain class of people, namely, you know, big powerful bankers, can commit crimes with total impunity. And if they can confiscate your money that way, they're going to get you that way, but they're going to get you.
Again, to further embellish on that one, The Big Short with Michael Burry, who's someone I still follow, and he made recent utterances again. He faced three federal inquiries for the billions he made on The Big Short, where he actually had reported skullduggery. And there wasn't a single arrest during the what's known as the Great Financial Crisis, as far as I'm concerned, depression with entire bank failure that was only saved on account of unprecedented financial conduct. But anyway, it was a depression that was caused by these people, and they created toxic assets that they dispersed and sold across the world, which contaminated the dumb banks of Switzerland and Germany as well. So it got globalized. It was the first virus to go global. It was a pandemic of toxicity, if you wish, in a different form. And there was no one, not a single soul of any C-level bank has even been rounded up. But he got an IRS audit. He got three Fed knockups for being the guy who reported the poor conduct that was going on, made people aware of the nature of what was going on. And the ratings agency that slept on it, eventually one of them, I think it was S&P, downgraded the dollar. And it's the, they got rewarded with a investigation, and I think it led to actually a CEO resignation with the harassment as one of them. They got investigated for subprime, being the guys that downloaded the dollar a whole bunch. It was dollar debt that they did a downgrade on. And then none of the others then moved. So Moody's and all the others. So right. Don't ever point a finger at the cartel and you'll just be fine. Right. But the minute you start highlighting the weaknesses, you find yourself at the end of judicial review investigations and all of that. So I absolutely second what you said with, and there's so many examples.
But let me talk a minute about what you said about Michael Burry and skullduggery and what the behavior he was talking about, what he was complaining about, because I know what he's talking about. I'll give you an example involving Goldman Sachs.
Yes.
I'll circle back to you in a minute. But Goldman Sachs had an investment one time called Hudson, where Goldman had a bunch of bad debt on its books. And, you know, they were moving bad debt for other people, too. And what Goldman Sachs did is they went to their own clients, their own investors, and said, hey, we've got a great investment here. It's called Hudson. It's all these mortgage-backed securities. Wouldn't you like to get in on Hudson? Investors are like, nah, yeah, I don't know. Tell us more. Goldman Sachs is like, we're so confident in Hudson that we've got $6 million of our own money on Hudson. And the investors are like, yeah, that sounds great, man. We want to get in on it too. The investors invest $1.7 billion in Hudson. What Goldman Sachs didn't tell the investors was, yeah, they did have $6 million invested in Hudson. And that much is true. What they left out, though, was that Goldman had taken credit default swaps out on Hudson, betting that it would fail to the tune of $1.7 billion. So that when the investors, they all got wiped out. They lost all $1.7 billion. Which went right into the pocket of Goldman Sachs. It was straight up concealment of material fact. It was straight up criminal fraud. Goldman Sachs was never investigated, never subpoenaed in that case. And we know from the DOJ's release and what we've learned subsequently about the DOJ, is the DOJ at that time, it was run by Eric Holder. He was the attorney general. The assistant AG, as I said, was Lanny Brewer. Both of those guys from a law firm called Covington & Burling that represented Goldman Sachs. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying they represented Goldman Sachs on that case. They couldn't have. But the point is that Goldman Sachs and a lot of other Wall Street banks are their clients. And you're right. The prosecution is totally selective. It's not like I'm not telling you that the DOJ never issued subpoenas or never issued wiretaps. It did. Remember Rajaratnam? I think he worked at an outfit called Galleon. See, he's small enough to fail. He gets nailed. He gets nailed to the wall for insider trading. But guess who he was feeding his information to or from?
The one who did it, Mr. Cohen.
from Goldman Sachs, who never gets investigated.
Yeah.
It's like, are you kidding me? How much more blatant can you be with a double standard where these people here are above the law and these people here are actually the victims of law now that the law is being used as a weapon by people like Goldman Sachs? You have to be kidding me. This is going on in broad daylight.
If I'd done half of what Steve Cohen got away with doing, I would have been jailed for 30 years, no doubt about it, in the US. But yet it's absolutely correct. And of course, Goldman Sachs were involved in actually doing similar opaque vehicles to mask Greece's level of indebtedness for putting it into the euro in the original instance that they were supposed to comply with Maastricht criteria with a lot of offshore opaque assets. They basically lied, helped them mask a fraud to get into the euro because they wanted them, and now they are left to reap and sow the cost of that shotgun marriage that should never have taken place, that has put such hardship on the Greece and actually surrendered them as being an autonomously run country as far as anyone could be in the euro, because essentially everything now is German diktat. They're nothing more than a municipal office in Athens. And I know this from my Cyprus existence. So in terms of what's coming, John, looking forward, so we're putting on our future, our scenario casting, and we're cackling at the actual nature of this mafia where there's selective prosecution only. Where do us as middle class, retail, homeowners, where we're going to be attacked by the system. It seems BlackRock is an investor, a major vehicle for the cartel. How do you see, and they're buying up a lot of US property under, at the moment, where do you see this going? Is physical property going to be similarly affected as we're seeing Russia's digital property, people's Bitcoin being sent to truckers? Are we going to start to see something more tangible? Is it, it's a small step, surely.
Yeah, it's a great question, but it's also an unanswerable question, because once you lose the rule of law and once criminal elements are running the system, you don't know what they're going to do. You're at their mercy. You know, there's no, you know, once you've lost the rule of law and you have this sort of criminal element on top that's making these decisions and deciding things, sort of like, you know, I'll get to this later, but BlackRock doing things that sort of anticipated the pandemic. Yeah. Once you have that situation where the criminal element is able to control the system, you know, all bets are off. You know, you're dealing in a rigged casino. So at that point, to me, the only thing that you can really reliably invest in, and this is going to sound cheesy, but it's true, is yourself. Yeah. You know, I try to invest in things that are in my mind and that can't be taken out. You know, yeah. Education, you know, learning skills. Like I learned learned how to turn on a camera. I learned how to record. I learned, you know, what else can you do? Because anything else, you're subject to the whims, you know? So who knows where the market's going to go? There's no predicting it, because it can be turned off like a light. It, like I say, at the whim of people who are up to no good.
Yeah, we are in the decade, it seems, of metadata and surveillance finance. And I just wonder, for people that make an activity of being aware, being truth tellers, and invest in themselves and skill sets and informing others, which to a degree you have done, you're an activist with quality research on the specific topic of the erosion of rule of law. Unfortunately, when you're in a mafia, being the town crier that calls foul is not necessarily great positioning. And it's something I struggle with all along, because in essence, you have to be somewhat bold and you probably got a target on your back. The surveillance, degree of surveillance is way beyond that even the best of us imagine, with devices that record you even with when off. You've got TVs that listen to you. The mainstreaming of products such as Alexa and all the other equivalents, it literally means we are in a slave society. Surely we are already there, a technological oligarchical slave society where might is right and the dominance is with those that hold the strings to the technology and the force, the man with the gun, the ability to send the man with a gun to your house.
Yeah, and that may be more... there may be more specific information on that score than you might even realize. We're headed toward, the powers that be have made no secret of the fact that they are absolutely enamored of central bank digital currency, CBDC. Yes. And the head of the Bank for International Settlements, Augustin Carstens, is on record in October of 2020 saying, we love the control we have with CBDC, yeah. That we can control every penny. We know every penny you have, where you're spending it. The question that I don't see asked that much, if very rarely, is what is going to back the CBDC? So right now, everybody would agree that the central bank digital currency would be the third liability on the Fed's balance sheet. The first two liabilities being cash, which is physical, and reserves, which are electronic. CBDC would be the third, it would be a digital liability available at the retail level. Yeah. With cash and reserves, the answer to what backs it is, it's basically bonds. It's treasuries, or it tends to be mortgage-backed securities, but it's large, massive bonds. What's going to back the CBDC? It might be backed by, say, a $1 billion bond, but there's nothing, if you're really intent on control, there's nothing stopping the powers that be from backing each individual CBDC holder with their own bond. Basically, each person. So if I get $1,000 CBDC from the Fed, the backing might be my IOU to the Fed. Excuse me. Do you follow me? So you could.
Absolutely. I don't think they're going to be too aggressively backed. I think they might create a portfolio of some loose tie to gold, because I think there's a multi-generational element that old school believes in gold. I think I think military defense and might is actually, unfortunately, scale is going to be a thing because we're big. We run the biggest. It's not actually an asset, but it's domination. It's the ability to dominate. And I think it's pretty much going to be vaporware, to be honest. But they're going to try to do their best to mask the fact that it's entirely vaporware. So some elements of physicality, so you could get a partial. I don't think we're ever going back to a full gold standard. It doesn't serve them. They wish to proliferate and to expand and continue to run the same game that they've done and ensure entrench their enrichment at the cost of everybody else. But there'll probably be some elements of gold and then a basket. It's kind of, I don't know if you recall, we spoke of Michael Burry and the subprime element. And right. What they supposedly did is they sliced the debt to varying quality. There was right the way due. And then they said, look, we'll take all the worst parts. So all these people that are on ninja loans that essentially no job, no income, but we'll create a portfolio. And portfolio theory means you diversify out the risk. So it's kind of like, excuse the language, but it's kind of like you take a whole bunch of different forms of fertilizer. I'm talking about horse crap and bull crap and manure. Right. And you somehow get alchemy. You get a portfolio of gold when actually all you have is a portfolio of shit. Right. And the notion that by collectively bringing it all together, it's unlikely that, where you won't have something that's holding up when something's going down. When in actual fact, they were all part of the same category of basically shit. So you have a portfolio of shit and you got this alchemy that was sold as AAA, which the ratings agencies were very much complicit in. So it was a complete fraud. It was very, very high. It should have been classified as extremely risky junk, very high, and all deeply correlated because they were all participating in the same Ponzi scheme. Areas that didn't normally become home ownership, didn't have the level of income, didn't have the same levels, were all being portfolioed and were all correlated. If the economy turned down and property markets stopped going up, they would all fail on their loans. So they were the diversification element was a complete fraud by nature. And it's almost like an alchemy of garbage will suddenly give you gold. Which is a great lie. And part of me thinks they will still have a portfolio of everybody's CBDC on the basis that if you have a Chinese CBDC, a European, an African, and a North American, in essence, you are diversified. Meanwhile, everybody is participating in the same fraud again. But the notion is you should have comfort because if one country goes down, the other one's going to be strong. So you've got the commodity currencies up at the moment because it's inflation and Japan down at the moment because, they import commodities. But, when in actual fact, it's all based off the same principle. So you just have various flavors of shit instead of diversification away. And I think in answer to your question to me, that's what I think they will do. They'll pass off the supposed new CBDC assets class, mainly on account of diversification and some loose partial representation in some physical elements to try give it some tangibility for the old school guys. That's my opinion.
Wow. I've never heard anybody venture an opinion like that. That's really interesting. Let me just kind of ask you a question. So sure. If I go to the Fed's H.4.1 report right now, you'll see on the asset side, a massive amount of treasuries. I'm just going to ballpark it at $5 trillion, and a massive amount of mortgage-backed securities, again, ballparking about $3 trillion. So if CBDC comes out, let's say there's $1 trillion of CBDC as a liability side, what appears on the asset side of the Fed's balance sheet corresponding to the $1 trillion in CBDC as a liability? Would it be like instead of a mortgage-backed security, a human-backed security?
Possibly. In other words, your future. So the one thing that sustains, they essentially, I don't know, I mean, you're a man of the law, and birth certificates are essentially legalese, the person by the name of in capital letters. All of this is very, very interesting. So by essence, they incorporate you, and therefore they're entitled to a cut of your income stream from birth to death by virtue. And in the return, they give you a passport so that you can travel and all of this. So rights as a human are essentially taken back and given back as privileges, so your passport and everything. And then the tax extraction mechanism is therefore the future yield stream. So it's kind of like a property. You are, in essence, a property that has rental value.
And literally.
Then you become older and you are someone that seeks to take out of the system, you're no longer that very useful. This is a very interesting concept that came with the pandemic and the problem with the demographics that we have at the moment. So it's quite an interest where we have hopefully underpensioned underperforming assets, and we have the debt that most pensions have purchased losing value chronically at the moment, we actually have a pension crisis as well. So it's very handy. It would be a great time for a cull, particularly of the elderly, which some might argue was quite close to what ended up happening, only probably needs to occur again on a larger scale. So the financialization of human life is very much intricate. Eventually, to the point of, as I say, I think they're going to look for microchips inside you biometrically so that everything can be surveilled under the dermal layer of the skin, not just above. But at the moment, we're just at that point. We carry our own dog tag or our prisoner tag with us in the form of a device. So I think they financialize you as an income stream. So population is an asset class and the future yield. And then they will still have debt instruments, and it'll be somebody's liability and somebody's assets, and they will cross. They'll just create confusion with cross holdings and say, well, we have a portfolio. We hold some of theirs. They hold some of ours. It's a bit like, you know, Britain holds U.S. treasuries, but it's America probably holds a little bit of gilts of Britain. And it's kind of like, well, we have a bit of their assets, but it doesn't matter because it's all a category based off the same principle. So it's just literally we've given them some of our garbage and they're holding some of our garbage and we're holding this up as an asset. And it's only an asset as long as it has an income stream attached to it. And of course, when debt becomes hyper overvalued and no one can pay, then it's an asset that deflates to zero instantaneously. Right. But because we're in this leper colony where everyone has been synchronized to have leprosy, inherently, everybody's assets will simultaneously deflate to zero. And I think this is the problem, reaction, solution event that we're seeing. And that's why we talk a lot about the debt interest rate spike, which is one of the most aggressive spikes. We're at 0.3 on the 10-year treasury, and you've gone to virtually 3%. You're at 2.9s now. That's going to be a very psychological barrier break since March 2020 to now. And that is the problem is as you go down, as you're adding more debt and you're trying to sustain it as a valuable asset class, you have these two problems, supply and demand. Excess supply, but no, it's still worth billions. And here's some more of the super product that's worth billions. So one of the ways that they maintain this, and this is what Japan's doing, is that they do what's called yield curve control. Yield curve control is essentially manipulation. So you print new yen to buy debt, to artificially hold up the price of an asset class, because you need the interest rate to remain low on it. Because if the capital value starts falling, the relative yield goes up. That is required. There's an inverse relationship between a bond and its value. So in Falker highs of interest rates, bonds were worth very low. And then we had a bond bull market from the Falker era. The entire Greenspan, Bernanke, all the way through Yellen was just, everybody thinks it was an equities buy the damn dip. You know, think of that buy the damn dip clip, a slightly fouler word being used there. But actually it was the exact same for the bond market. So you had a buy the damn dip bond trade that is finally coming to an end. And the debt failure of the system is in essence the beginning of the reset. I don't think we turn back this clock. And what you have is the yen is collapsing now because they are trying to hold their interest rates down and keep their bond values up. Because if they let the bond values drop, that yield goes up. And they're at 270 plus debt to GDP. So their payment on their own debt becomes unsustainable. So they're trying to manipulate. They're probably a decade ahead in terms of the indebtedness scale. So we're having a collapse of the yen at the moment. So it's all part of the financial system where the leaks are popping up in the plumbing. Anyway, I've gone on a big financial spiel there in answering your question. But that's what I think they'll do. They'll do cross holdings of vaporware that will be fluffed up to appear like meaningful assets. And then then there'll be a little bit of physical there. They might even create a commodity fund. If commodities are what I think they're going to be, we're going to see a lot of value running into physical things. They might even asset class the home because BlackRock is purchasing an immense amount of property. And so apparently Bill Gates on farmland. So essentially those things provide yields. So you can actually portfolioize that and make it an asset class and put a big debt number against it and raise money against it. So reduce it to a shell of value saying, well, this is worth this because those farms create X amount of wheat and we own this. So this is my concern that in the UK, a lot of British farmers, the old school, are all being offered retirement and purchase prices for their land. And you're seeing the same with Bill Gates. So what is actually happening, I think, is we're getting the Bolshevik communism where state is final owner of land, but they will have this supposed private public policy where you have these quasi private companies such as BlackRock, Vanguard,
right,
that are asset holders and pretend not to be government, even though they are an extension and they are an oily cartel. So this axis of these alleged private companies that literally are unsuable, will never face any headaches from the Department of Justice, Larry Fink at BlackRock being, you know, a cornerstone. They got, Jim Rickards pointed out that they got too big to fail rating. So they get an automatic decree of bailout on any asset class that was lost. So
BlackRock?
Yes.
Yeah, they got a lot more than that.
Yes. Tell us, let's hear your take on that.
Well, first of all, I find that speculation horrifying, because in my last video, one of the things I talk about is a Treasury report. There's actually two Treasury reports back to back, fiscal year 2020 and fiscal year 2021. The annual report from the Treasury says the fiscal past is unsustainable. And, yes, you know, I go through the video, I walk through, I said, when you add interest plus Social Security plus Medicare plus Medicaid, it's now in excess of your tax receipts, because you can't really reduce any of those things.
Yeah.
And as a consequence of that, the Treasury's own graphs show debt to GDP up in a line, 500, 600, 700, 800%.
Correct.
And so it's like, I'm thinking to myself, well, what are they going to do about that? The Treasury report says the way to take care of that is you reduce Social Security payments, you reduce Medicare payments. I'm here to tell you, that's not going to happen. They need to find another way to rein in the spiraling costs. And now, like you point out, interest rates are spiking. They spiked up most in the last, I think, 3 weeks since 1987, according to the Wall Street Journal. And now you see mortgage rates above 5% for the first time since 2011. I mean, this is a real problem, because your interest payment on your debt right now, it's bad. It's not terrible, because interest rates are low. It's going up. It's just going to get that much worse. So it's like, well, for sure, you're on your way toward losing world reserve currency status, and things are going to get worse. But ultimately, how are you going to rein in all these costs? And what you just outlined is horrifying, because it's like, well, if you control people's assets and you can control their money, you can turn it on and off. Yeah, it's easy to control your liabilities then, because the money is a liability. We just delete a lot of money. No, your problem is solved.
Absolutely. I've got two points to come back on you that. And I'm going to just for 1 minute, you're not a chart guy, you're not a financial guy, so I'm not going to take you into deep waters that are unfamiliar. But I'm going to show you one thing that I think you'll just find interesting.
Yeah.
And this is the 10-year Treasury note yield. In technical analysis, we tend to find, this is a technical comment that's about charting, and it perfectly dovetails to a fundamental scenario. So that's why it's interesting. You'll be interested in the narrative and the fundamental scenario. And I'll just say this points to this event having occurred. When a trend ends, and in a simplistic sense, the dot-com boom, the NASDAQ had an absolute blow off in its final weeks. It had an incredible amount that it shot up in a very short time. It's known as a blow off event, and that's usually before the crash. And in a similar way, in charts, you get a final capitulation at the end of a bear trend. This is yields. What are we looking at? We're looking at the 10-year and the yields that are being paid on debt. And this is the 10-year yield. And what essentially, Falco, you had 15.7% in 1981.
Right.
And you've largely been in a downward trend in rates. So every time, and as the yield goes lower, the values of the bonds are actually going up higher.
Right.
And near an end of a trend that is a downtrend, you often get, it's quite important I say this is a log scale. So this is percentage change. It's not absolute amount the same. So it hyper magnifies when you have low amounts that say double. That's 100% move. If you go from 0.39 was the absolute low on the 10-year. That means every year, if you had $1 million dollars, let's use simpler numbers. If you had $100 in there, you got 39 cents a year in interest. That was the absolute low. This is called a final capitulation, and it's usually the bookend of a bear trend. And similarly, the blow off that you would associate with the NASDAQ of 2000 is the final bookend of a bull trend. You have a final charge where people don't even care the price, they just have to be in. And it's kind of was the same here. Pure fear of a global shutdown where the entire world was stopping working and every SME was being destroyed. And what you ended up getting was this huge collapse in rates and everyone chasing for the safety of the debt markets. It's final hurrah, and now it's being totally exposed. And what we're seeing is the snapback rally is very, very violent, because you're essentially at 3%, 2.9s from 0.39s. You've actually gone up about 8 or 9 times in the space of 18 months, 2 years. And that is very violent. And most people haven't realized that's the end of the debt system from here. But we don't get to go all the way to the previous highs, because we added so much debt along the way across here that I talk about the hand in the sweet bowl. You can put your hand through the neck and grab a single sweet. But if you try grab the whole, they're all these round sweets, and you grab a fistful like this, the hand doesn't come back out the jar. You just can't do it. What's happened is you've loaded up all the way down. So at much, much lower rates, you have complete debt failure. And this is why this capitulation and the end of the bond market bull that has essentially run, much like the equity bull from the 80s all the way to 2020, a 40-year cycle, is essentially over for us in our technical opinion. But yeah, that's just a comment, I suppose, to bring how technical analysis actually dovetails with now's the time. The debt is over. And as an asset class, you know, shadow stats in the US has inflation at 16% on the old Ronald Reagan's measure. So it's not even a number they made up themselves, just measuring it as per the 1982 measure. And you're at 16%. We should already be at Falker levels rates.
Yeah.
Now, there's no hope in hell. We brought up Michael Burry, and he apparently made some form of a comment. They're not serious about chasing inflation. It dovetails with our view very closely. Because in essence, at 8%, and they did a quarter point. They did a quarter point. You're on a quarter a point, and you added a quarter point. But you're a 7.5% behind the actual inflation rate. This is like sauntering after a bullet train that you've just missed on the platform and saying, yeah, I'm going to catch up with that. You know, it's not a sincere effort, taking 3 steps and having a coffee on the tracks. And I utterly concur with Burry's opinion. So in other words, he says they're just making a little bit of space so that they've got room to do cuts on the next crisis, some cuts. So they have some notional. It's kind of like having 3 bullets to hold off an army and a 9mm. At least you can fire a shot once and sound like you've got it. And funny enough, that's 3 bullets more than I expect Japan or the Eurozone to have. So it becomes the least, you know, you're slightly the least ugly leper in this beauty contest.
Right. Well, the other spiral is, you know, who's going to buy your debt? You got all this debt. You keep issuing debt. Who's going to buy it? The answer is, well, the issuer is going to buy it, namely the Fed.
Correct.
If you think we're done with QE, you're out of your mind. And remember, the way, you know, I talk about this in the video, Larry and Carson's Excellent Pandemic, the way the Fed structured the debt this time, when it issued money, it didn't just issue reserves when it bought assets. I mean, it did, because the Fed can only issue reserves, but reserves can only be used by banks. And what the Fed did in the 2020 iteration of QE is, it took the reserves and it bought assets from non-banks who don't transact in reserves. So how do you buy an asset from somebody who doesn't use your money? Well, you have an intermediary called the banks. And so the way it worked was, the Fed went to, say, CalPERS and bought $1 billion of their debt, you know, $1 billion of treasuries from CalPERS. And CalPERS, you know, it transferred the treasury it held, the debt it held, to the Fed. And then the Fed said, okay, well, to make you whole, you know, we'll send the reserves, since you can't use them, we'll send the reserve to Citibank, so that Citibank can use the reserves. $1 billion now goes to Citibank. And then Citibank, to make its books balance, will create $1 billion bank account in your name, CalPERS, and you get the money there. So if you take a step back and look at that transaction, it's a 3-way transaction. It was $2 billion created, not one. The Fed created $1 billion in reserves, and Citigroup created $1 billion more in bank money. And it was that bank money that CalPERS then used to turn around and get rid of its treasury. And now it's going to go buy a high-flying stock, say Tesla, or it's going to buy a SPAC or something else. And that's how you're dumping off those treasuries. And that's how people are getting away from the problem of low yield with treasuries, is they're turning around, putting in the stock market. And the reason I bought a BlackRock in that is, remember, the Fed hired BlackRock to come into the Fed and supposedly help the Fed pick which assets to buy with the new money. It's like, are you kidding me? They're on both sides of the trade, and BlackRock basically made him sign a waiver saying it was okay to do that, because, you know, obviously it's not okay to have inside information and gain from it. So the Fed signed a waiver and said, it's okay, you do whatever you want, BlackRock. It's unbelievable what's going on now. And it's going on abroad. I mean, I'm reading nothing more than press releases from the Fed to follow this. And I'm reading and I'm following nothing more than graphs that are provided by the St. Louis Fed, the Fred site, and looking at the graphs to see what's going on. It's all there in black and white. And like I say, it's broad daylight, fraud and corruption and a loss of the rule of law.
Yeah.
And it's not, we're in a spiral. Once you go down that road, you're not coming back out. You can't vote your way out from criminal control. That doesn't work that way.
No, what actually happens is they legalize it. They do absolutely biased, absolutely prejudicial, supremacist, special privilege things. And they actually then, instead of being called out of it, they make the lie the new truth. And they actually make the new legal principle that the following entities can and will do these things. In other words, they entrench what became a once-off scam that they were able to run. They entrench it as a new privilege that they have at the expense of everybody else.
And so they criminalize. Actually, and the only criminals in that transaction are people like Michael Berry, who pointed out.
Yes, that's right. That's it. This is unbelievable discussion and the complete loss of law. By the way, you also did some very interesting YouTubes. I think there is an Asian lady with some Russian background. I can't remember the name.
Professor Sala Omarova of
who
Cornell.
Was being brought in, and there was a great bit of resistance. And this good lady, what she was highlighting on the central bank digital currencies, that if you have inflation that's too high a level, all you do is take money away from people.
You just delete people's bank accounts.
So you have a central bank digital wallet. You've turned your hard-earned income of a lifetime has been converted into this money. They've printed so much money, they've created inflation, none of which was given to you. They then blame you for buying your groceries and a new car, for being the generator of pollution, non-green friendly, and as a result, also inflation. Causing supply chain disruptions, too many toilet rolls purchased at the last supermarket visit or something like that. And they will actually reduce your balance. And they'll say, we're doing this across the board to take the heat out of inflation. So it will actually be inflation in the first instance is a tax. And then the symptoms and subsequent response to the statistical numbers will lead to a further tax to reduce it. So if they utterly impoverish you, the only people that can cause inflation eventually will be government. Surely this is global UBI, and we're looking at this technological communist state run by a mafia.
Yeah, I could. So the professor was Sala Omarova. She had been nominated by Biden to head up the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency. And she had this Law Review article. It was published, I think it was in Vanderbilt Law Review. It's in that video I talk about. And she says in there, like, well, yeah, CBDC, it's a way to go, because you have all these extra liabilities on the balance sheet. Now you just get rid. If you have inflation, just cut people's bank accounts. You know, the guy, he hugged too many truckers. It's cut his bank account in half. That's how you solve inflation. It was like there in black. Like, you wrote this, you signed this, and now you're in front of the Congress testifying about this. Like, it's a good thing. Fortunately, her nomination was shot down.
Well, this time. Yeah. Right. Because of the outcry and the focus. But I think it's a matter of time before some form of a role is found for her, because she has the right kind of thinking for the supremacist Bolshevik movement that we seem to be under the cosh with. And I can see her absolutely getting a role in some place in the future. So essentially,
well, the other unbelievable thing about her nomination was that she had a shoplifting charge. As a law student, I'm not kidding. She was 28 years old. So one Friday night, she goes into the TJ Maxx and she loads up her shopping cart and she puts her purse in the middle of it and then appears to put things into the shopping cart that are actually going into her purse. And I don't mean just like a few things. I mean like four pairs of shoes and, you know, a sweater or some bracelets go in there. And she walks out in the parking lot and she gets busted in Madison, Wisconsin. Yeah.
But I find that is almost a qualification.
Right.
You look at Agent Orange, who I could refer to as Christine Lagarde, and she is absolutely a known fraud.
She's a convicted felon.
Yes.
She's a convicted criminal.
The CV for the new system, and if you, I mean, even if you go back into Tony Blair's history, there's some quite dark stuff in there. The CV is amoral, complete lack of morality, and tendency to want to strip others. Having a charge against you actually makes you better qualified. Right. That's become part of the criteria for selection.
I hate to laugh, but it's true.
It absolutely. This is an observation. I mean, all for want of crying, we laugh. The game clearly then is to do the most. It's clear that for that power, they need to digitize everything. Hence the war on cash. I'm pretty sure we're all well on board and established that. The protection, therefore, must be to hold as much as you can physically of great value on the basis that this chicanery and trickery is being designed so that they can hand out these haircuts on inflationary events and all of that. So surely we need to be holders of physical property. How do they undermine us on physical property? Holders of physical gold and silver, and at least make them send a man with a gun and go right across the line of absolute highway physical right threat of death robbery. Yep. That you are defending the asset. At least make it that, which is a harder call than this simple electronic haircut that we saw a la Cyprus.
Yeah, you want my money? You take it out of my fingers. You know.
Yeah.
Good luck.
And I don't think they're going to stop and not do that, but I don't think it comes first. In short, we're buying time here to the point.
Yeah, here's the thing. I don't think I'm going to win, but I'm not, you know, my goal is to go down swinging.
Yes.
You know, my favorite character in all the movies, there's a movie in 1976 called The Bad News Bears. And one of the little characters in there is a guy named Tanner. And Tanner's claim to fame on this team was he got his ass kicked by the seventh grade, yeah, right? Because he wanted to play baseball and he stood up for his team. You know, be Tanner. Just be ready to take one for the team big time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we've all got to do that. And we've got to arm up. We've got to get rural. We've got to get self-reliant. We've got to do all the key aspects. You've got to hold physical wealth. But how, as a lawyer, what is the access as a homeowner? What do you think? As a landowner, how are they going to do it? Is it going to be wealth taxes and they're going to try squeeze you out by making it non-viable and asserting you have special white privilege, landowner privilege, some other form of privilege that should be dispersed more evenly? I don't know if you're aware of this. Vitalik Buterin of Ethereum was collared by a Chicago professor. They were in some form of project together. And the Chicago professor, very similar profile to a kind of Fink, only on the academic side, is wanting all property to be registered on the blockchain and that there will be self-assessed valuations whereby you pay tax on those self-assessed valuations. And if you ever deemed to have lowballed, another actor, unspecified, can immediately assert a purchase at the price of valuation. Google for that, you'll be shocked. In other words, they want to legalize the ability to buy everybody out whilst having the control to print up the money and the central bank digital tokens to do that. So literally no number is too big in time for acquiring all the property of the world.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, the best advice is, you know, get to know your neighbors and get, you know your sheriff. The sheriff is probably the last line of defense at the county level, you know? But because you can't predict what they're going to do. I mean, the combination of the money printing, like you just said, the money printing really is in the same hands as the DOJ, the law enforcement, and the money printing in the same hands. Under the Constitution, you know, in the U.S., the power to coin money is Article 1. It's in Congress. Law enforcement is in Article 2. Those powers are supposed to be separate for a reason, because they're the most dominant sovereign powers that there are. Money printing and law enforcement, and now they've been merged, which is you at that point you're on the slippery slope to totalitarianism, which is where they are, and there's no predicting that, you know. I'm not in the business of trying to predict that. What I do, turn off my TV, you know, I stay away from mainstream media.
Walk the dog.
I walk the dog. I hold, you know, I'm a big fan of physical silver, and I'm a fan of cash.
Yeah.
You know, I keep it simple. I don't know where they're going, but to answer your question, how are they going to come at us? Well, the easiest way, the tried and true way, is via inflation. Just cheapen your money.
Yeah. You know, destroy the value of money is the first call. And we are busy witnessing the direct and immediate effects of that right now.
Yeah, in real time.
Globalization that they triggered, that Fink was pointing out as a result of the Ukraine war, is also a massive inflationary petrol bowl, because we suddenly halve the world that we can source things from and the relative value that goes with that. I mean, Russia's just going to send all their energy to China. China will take as much as they can get.
Right.
And we've now got, Europe is now buying natural gas from America that's being, you know, highly expensively compressed into liquid gas, put in specialist ships out of Houston and being shipped to Europe. So Europe is just deeply, deeply in trouble on any number of levels, and probably going to be one of the first to really, really have a massive downscaling in quality of life for the average man. Apart from those things we mentioned, what else should guys do? Surely there's going to be a two-tier system, a law for the many.
There's a two-tier system now.
Yeah.
You know, the law is used as a weapon against people like you and me, the regular guy. That's one tier. And the other tier is the people who print money and who own the DOJ, who are above the law and they can't be reined in. So
but it seems like they're going to go so far as formalizing that. It's almost going to become that you've got to acknowledge your...
The only thing left now is to formalize it and to make you an asset on the balance sheet, on their private balance sheet. That's it. So, you know...
And hence that dovetails with the chip inside the animal, because in the same way a cow and a sheep that needs tracking needs to have its fleas removed and various other activities. In essence, we are the new assets and we are going to be farmed.
Right. You're sheep and your job is to be sheared.
Yeah. And the minute you're not being extracted from enough and you're reaching an age where you need to be an extra to receive some of your pension liabilities, it seems that you become a less attractive asset that is no longer worth holding. And it seems there's mechanisms now for tapering the demographic problem.
Yes. And that's scary, because that does solve what I was talking about earlier with the Treasury. You know, your Social Security and your Medicare and your Medicaid, your health component, which is largely centered in the gerontocracy, the older part of the population. You know, they're older and sicker and they're drawing more. If you could find a way, if you could find some way to reduce the number of old people, that would reduce our costs. And we could have austerity that way. You're exactly right. It's not a pleasant thought, but believe me, I'm not the only person whose mind it has crossed before.
Yeah. And with this anti-pandemic pact that Sam Bankman-Fried and his brother Gabriel, that is actually running a number of them, that they are funding, isn't it funny how if you're funding the super PAC and actually paying and sponsoring Democratic candidates as well with this as their remit, isn't it ironic, and doesn't it almost imply that we're certainly facing this demon again?
Yes, I think that's exactly right. I don't think like there's a big effort now on the part of the WHO, the World Health Organization, to pass this global pandemic treaty. Why would they do that? Why are they so interested in the whole wide world agreeing to this a treaty where, you know, if the treaty as it's drafted goes through, it would supplant your own constitution. So it would be their rules taking the place of the national law, which is the globalist wet dream. Let's face it. They want a global currency and they want global rules so they can turn on and off your money willy-nilly. Why is the WHO so interested in this now, after we just got through a pandemic? Do they know something we don't? And the answer is, yeah, they do. For damn sure they do. They're not whistling Dixie here.
No, it's for absolute reasons. And so does it with the bail-in laws on banks and all of that. Well, this has been great, John. I've thoroughly enjoyed chatting to you. So let's just go over the basics for people that would like to follow you and be kept up to date with the legal undermining of the rule of law in America generally and specifically, but also happening in similar ways in this transnational bodies that seem to have reach through all over the world. People should go to Best Evidence on Odyssey. This is where this video will likely be. Best Evidence on BitChute, and also where it can survive on YouTube. A final parting shot in Holland. I don't know if you're aware of this, because you will be very American-centric. We have two client families that told us that the Dutch have passed a law that they can have you removed from your private property to put in Ukrainian refugees. In an emergency situation such as Ukrainian refugees, they can have you stand down from your own. And let's be clear, I'm not talking about a landlorded empty property that is not being utilized. Even that's extreme. I'm talking about you yourself in your own home currently being utilized. They can put you in some form of other temporary accommodation so that they can better utilize that asset under certain extreme circumstances for which Ukrainian refugees in this current conflict are such.
That's horrifying.
Now, how about that as an attack on property law, a sort of supranational access?
Yeah, and I got to remind people, a lot of times Europe and really overseas generally is where the experiment is done before those chickens come home to roost in the U.S.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
And by the way, I've got another documentary, another big long form piece coming out in the next couple of weeks on my YouTube channel, BitChute Odyssey, called Murder of a Rebel Nation, where I go really into, I'm going to walk through how the rule of law was killed off in the U.S. But for now, probably the best thing I've done on the rule of law is a long piece I did called The Veneer of Justice in the Kingdom of Crime. So if you want to know sort of what the DOJ was up to, how the rule of law, you know, works, what it is, that's the best thing I have. I did it 2016.
So The Veneer of Justice in a
Kingdom of Crime.
Kingdom of Crime. I love that.
Very important to have a face that, like you say, we're going to legalize it, the crime. So The Veneer of Justice in a Kingdom, what is in reality a kingdom of crime. That's the video.
Absolutely. I love this. I thoroughly enjoyed the interview. John, you're a fountain of information. I would suggest to everybody watching this right now, go and start with the Odyssey. Go and find The Veneer of Justice in a Kingdom of Crime to get some of the backstory of what's already dropping, the shoes that are dropping on the undermining of the rule of law. Yeah. And remember, when we say get physical, get remote, get community centered, know your sheriff was something that John certainly came out with. I would say add your local farmer, butcher, candlestick maker to that as well. Thank you very, very much, John. Enjoyed it immensely, and I've thoroughly enjoyed this. Thank you very much for coming on.
Well, thanks for so much for having me, Francis. It's been a real pleasure to meet you and be on your show.
Tired of profit wipeouts and blown accounts from following trade signal groups? Looking for a better way to trade? Why not be part of a principled, structured, and technically based community set inside a unique trading methodology? Enjoy a constructive learning environment while practically trading markets, supported by a bespoke platform run through browser or app, specifically designed to teach and engage you whilst learning and growing as the markets move. This is not a Telegram or Slack signal group. All trade ideas are based on a proprietary technical analysis process honed over decades, which is the HVF method, leading to trade ideas with fast-moving breakouts and tight stops, exact entries and exits, nuanced interim considerations, and ultimately strong rewards. Submissions are graded and scored by Francis for potential high-quality setups, and we provide bespoke tools to help get the job done properly and with precision. Over time, and with focused effort, you'll begin to look at charts, price action, and markets in a whole new light. Community updates every day by Francis and our three webinars a week provide a 360-degree approach, which are presented by our experienced team of trade leaders, to spot potential trades. We're a community of self-actualized individuals, spanning the globe and active 24/7, 365. The premium community provides a warm, supportive, and cooperative place for people willing to listen, participate, contribute, and to learn. Transform your approach to trading now. Transform your life. Book an introductory call with us on the link below.